Okay, so last week we had a chance to think about Shabbos globally, understand the Isra Malacha as a whole, and how it fits in, how the dinim of Isra Malacha and how the sort of the halacha category, the definitions of Malacha and Av and Tolda, how they all relate to the concepts behind Hilchos Shabbos. We saw how it relates to other mitzvah, how Malacha intertwines with other mitzvahs of Shabbos, and particularly Kiddush, and also how it relates to Shabbos as Zecher L'Maaseh Breishis. So that was sort of the overview. And I'm ready to actually jump in. And last week I had a chance to see also some nuts and bolts in terms of Halacha L'Maaseh, the details of Kiddush Havdalah and Suda Shabbos, a little bit about Muktzah. And now I'm ready to jump into details of Malachas. Now I assume this list is probably familiar. And you see the list in its original context. And that is a Mishnah in the 7th parak of Masechta Shabbos. Even though the list of 39 Malachas could have been sort of the opening of a Masechta Shabbos, but as was the case for one of several reasons, when Yehuda Nasi organized Mishnayos, he chose to not consistently start with the core ideas of any topic, whether it's to draw you into cases first or whatever the rationale was. But this comes around a third of the way into the Masechta. Perek Zayin Mishnah Beis, a list of Lama Tes Malachas. I assume it's familiar to everyone. Everyone's seen this list many times. I assume you also know that this list of 39 Malachas does break down into a number of subgroups. I assume that's a familiar one way of thinking about it is, which the Gemara already begins to talk about, is to think about it as mostly strings of Malachas that lead, the sort of sequences of Malachas that lead to a given product. So let's say the first 11 Malachas, the Gemara refers to as Sidur the Pas, the sequence of Malachas that get you to bread from the working the ground, the planting, the plowing, the planting, and the harvesting, working your way from raw grain all the way until you have lush and ofel. You're kneading the dough, you're baking it, and that ends sequence number one. And then you have the next sequence after making bread is making clothing. Then you go from the 12th malacha, gozes atzemer, from shearing wool, processing it, cleaning it, and processing it, and working into thread, and then working the thread into woven cloth. And if you like, you can add to that also kosher, matir, and tofer, and korea, tying, untying, and sewing, and breaking, stitching. So that's your series of malachas about making cloth. And then the third is you can think either as making leather or making a sefer, because you start from the raw, you know, catching the animal, shechting the animal, all the way skinning it, and then processing it into leather, and then kosev and mochik. So you can either just think of it as making leather, or you can think of it as taking the kosev mochik as following that. So it's already have making bread, making clothing, making a sefer, and then finally you have the last couple of pairs, individual malachas at the end. Again, you can think about kosev and mochik as writing and erasing as sort of the separate pairs, or as the end of the third sequence. Then bon and soser, mechaba maver, building, destroying, light and fire, put it out, and finally Makav Patish and Motzim Yerushos Mishos, and that completes the list of Lamatas Malachas. Okay, so I said last time that I wanted, now the truth is, it's fascinating, the Rambam also has his list of Lamatas Malachas in the seventh parak of Hilchos Shabbos, which is actually more surprising. I think I may have mentioned last week, one of the Rambam's critical goals in writing the Mishnah Torah, this compendium of all of Torah Shval Peh, Halacha L'Maaseh, one of the major contributions that he made was to thoroughly, from the ground up, reorganize everything into strict logical order. So it's not surprising the list of Lama Tes Malachas appears in the 7th parak of Masechta Shabbos instead of the 1st parak. It is sort of surprising that it appears in the Rambam, in parak Zayin. He does begin Hilchos Shabbos by, laying out, there is an Iser, Lo Sasein Aladu Malacha, And it talks about that in general terms, some definitions of what constitutes melacha. But then, instead of following up in Perek Beis, and here are the 39 melachos, he gets into other issues. He starts talking about Perek Beis about Pikuach Nefesh, then he starts talking about different Erev Shabbos issues, and about how to get food ready before Shabbos, which in many ways parallels the early topics in Masechta Shabbos. Then he goes on to talk about Amir Lenachri, when it is and is not Mutter, always important to mention. The Amir Lenachri is the name of an Isser, not the name of a Heter. There is an Avera, it is an Isser Drabbanan against asking a non-Jew to do on Shabbos what I cannot do on Shabbos. There are a series of differences, because it's an Isser Drabbanan, so Chazal were making the rules, so they were able to build in a number of kulas that don't apply to Melechis Yisrael. But Amir Lenachri is an Isser with several Heterim. And then finally, Perek Zayin, the Rambam is ready to talk about Lamatas Melachos. And that occupies almost the entire rest of Hilchos Shabbos. But just as an aside, Chaim Soloveitchik, Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rav's son, I had a chance once to see an essay. I don't know whether he ever published in a journal. He very fascinating insights into the organization of the Rambam's Hilchos Shabbos. He suggests that while the Rambam, what the Rambam put in Hilchos Shabbos follows his usual standards, working through all the sugyos in Bavli and elsewhere and figuring out what's halacha l'masa, but he thinks that the and overall the organization followed Rambam's usual principles. But there are a lot of subtle pieces of how he organized it to, at the same time, sort of almost like a subtext. Well, everything is also, he's teaching Hilchos Shabbos, but he's also simultaneously, without detracting from what he's teaching on Hilchos Shabbos, also waging a polemic against the Karam. The Karam, when the Rambam came to Egypt, the Karaites had already been around for a couple of centuries at that point. They were, I guess you could say, spiritual heirs to the Tzedukim of earlier generations. They, like the Tzedukim, were Apikursim, who rejected the Torah Shebaal Peh. Not that they didn't have any interpretation, because you can't, Chumash is not operational without interpretation, but over time they sort of developed their own interpretation, which definitely was closer to the Pshuto Shel Mikra. They rejected the Torah Shebaal Peh, and when Rama came to Egypt, he found that the Karaites were politically and socially the powerful elite establishment. And the Rambam, they were seen by men, they practically speaking, they were tend to be wealthier, they tend to be more politically connected, they were seen as being more intellectually sophisticated, and there were, a lot of the Rambam's energy for many, many years went into combating the Karaim. And he suggests a lot of the issues that Rambam gives prominence to through his reorganization speak to Karaite issues. Number one, Pikuach Nefesh, the Karam did not recognize that they would let someone die rather than Michal Shabbos save life. And then the discussion in the beginning about how you're going to set up food to be hot. So the Karam assumed that you can't have fires lit on Shabbos, not just you can't light the fires. Their Shabbos were cold and dark and sad. They also assumed that from a mood perspective, the Shabbos was supposed to be a very negative day. And he writes, Chaim Soloveitchik suggests that's at the very end. You look at the last parrots. We looked last week. The second last parak of the Rambam, Parak Haftas, is about Kiddush and Havdalah. The last parak is about Kavod and Oneg, and the way he uses that to close the Shabbos, perhaps in part, to remind us that all of these dinim are supposed to produce something glorious, which is something we touched on last week. Then they also speak to one more thing, and that brings us back to Malacha. When he does talk about Malacha, say, oh, Parak Zayin, he gives us the list of Lamtas Malachas, slightly resequences them, and then begins in Perek Ches to go through Malacha by Malacha, all details. Chorish, what are the details of Chorish? You can't do this, you can't. This is a problem, that's not a problem. Zoreya, Kotzer, etc. Goes on for many prakim, working his way patiently through all the Lamatas Malachos. A lot about carrying. Carrying is a tremendous amount of details in terms of the Halachas of Hotzah and Rishuyos. And then that wraps up around Perek Chaf or so. Perek Chaf is about having animals carry. And then it says more or less Perek Zayin to Perek Chaf is a list of Lamatas Malachas. And then he starts again. Perek Chavav, he starts once again, the next Kavar Prakim, going through all the Amtas Malachas. Why? Because now he's going to talk about the Drabbanans. Up until now, he went through the Dinum Daraisa of each Malacha, Avos and Toldos, and now he's going to tell you what are the Gzeiros Drabban that relate to Chorish, that relate to Zoreh, that relate to Kotzer. And again, it's very methodical, step by step, going through the Lamtas Malachas in order. I should share with you that he has a very, very striking opening to Perek Chafalaf. The way he introduces this list of Drabbanans is through a pasuk. He says, Torah says Tishbos. I think we closed with this topic last time. The Torah says Tishbos. The Torah says that in addition to the Isur, the Losase of Losase Kamalacha, with which the Rabbim opened Perek Aleph, there's also Mitzvah Asay. If a Jew succeeds in avoiding Malacha, not only have you a sidestepped violation of an Isur, you have a Kaya Mitzvah of Tishbos. And here he says, Nerva Torah Tishbos, and therefore you have to be Shovis even from things which are not Malacha. And there are many things that Chazal forbade. Midrash Banan, and here we go. Either because they're similar to Malachas or a Gezerah to avoid, to make sure you avoid doing Malach, and then that launches him into the list of all the Din Drabbanans. So the Magen Mishnah says, I missed something. You start with the Pasuk, and then the next line you talk about Drabbanans. Are you talking about Mitzvah Daraisa of Tishbos? Talk about Din Drabbanan. So that's the Magen Mishnah says, I think the Rambam here is in his own words formulating the same ideas we saw last week, which we closed with last week, the words of the Ramban in Parshas Zemar, that Shabbosot, the mitzvah, is sort of filling in, putting flesh on the bones. The law of malacha is the letter of the law. You can't do any malacha. But I could, technically speaking, fulfill the letter of the law, but miss the spirit of the law. I could avoid doing any malacha deraisa, but it's not going to be Shabbosot. So the Rambam understands, and this is an important concept that you'll see elsewhere in Halacha as well, there could be situations where there's a general Isser Mitzvah Daraisa where Chazal may have specified how certain ways to fulfill that Mitzvah Daraisa. So what the Rambam is saying here is if you keep the Din Drabbanan of Shabbos, keep what Chazal referred to as a Shvus. Shvus is a Hilchos Shabbos is one of those areas that has a special term to refer to its drabbanos. In the world of Hilchos Shabbos, a shvus, it means an issur drabbanon. Some of you hear the term shvus to shvus, and shvus because it's a double drabbanon in the area of Hilchos Shabbos. Why is it called shvus? Because Rambam explained, because it's a fulfillment of tishvos. That's the interesting thing. If I keep the drabbanons, not only have I kept the drabbanon, but I've succeeded in actually keeping them, being mekayim the mitzvah daraisa of tishbos. Just like, for instance, there is a mitzvah daraisa of benching. Okay. So in the Torah, the Gemara tells us in the seventh paragraph of Brachas, there's certain key themes that need to be discussed. You have to talk about food, and probably talking about Torah and bris, and Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, so forth. Okay. But min haTorah, I could have thought of many that I could make up my own text, as long as it covers all the key topics. I've fulfilled the mitzvah d'oraisa of Birkas HaMazon. One could think of 1,000 different ways. You could have 1,000 different possible texts you could have recited, any of which would have fulfilled the mitzvah d'oraisa of Birkas HaMazon. Chazal came along and said, Midrabanan, you need to say the brachas that we have. So that's But when you fulfill the mitzvah rabbanan of saying this particular formula, it's actually you're fulfilling the mitzvah d'oraisa of Birkas HaMazon. But min haTorah, I could have chosen many different ways to do it. Min rabbanan, they said you need to kind of mitzvah d'oraisa of Birkas HaMazon with this particular text or tefillah, which according to Rambam, to daven every day is a mitzvah d'oraisa. But Rambam says, look, min haTorah, you could have a lot of flexibility in terms of what you say. And Rambam said that things are for the first 1,000 years of Jewish history, from Moshe until Ezra. Everyone davened every day, but everyone said whatever they wanted to say. Ezra came along, and had certain guidelines of what counts as tefillah, but yeah, transmitted flexibility. Ezra came along and said, you can continue to say whatever you want to say, but at minimum, you got to say Shemona Esrei. So once again, that's Chazal coming and saying, there's so many different ways to fill the mitzvah d'oraisa. Midrabanan, you need to fill the mitzvah d'oraisa this way, or at the very least, minimally this way. You want to say Shemona Esrei plus your own tefillah, that's fine. But they picked how you're going to fulfill the mitzvah d'oraisa. So here too, min haTorah, you need to figure out how you're going to be shoveis, how you're going to maintain the spirit of Shabbos, and that's a mitzvah d'oraisa. But min haTorah, I could have thought of other things to do to ensure Tishbos. Chazal came along and said, here's a set of drabbanim of Shmusin, and the very least you need to do this in order to fulfill Shabbosom. So Chaim Soloveitchik suggests that the fact that the Rambam sets the drabbanans aside from the Daraisas, and he could have gone, instead of having two separate lists, he could have said, Zoreya, here are the Daraisas, here are the drabbanans. So and so. So he thinks the fact that Rama made a separate list of drabbanans may be once again part of the anti-Karaite polemic. Be that as it may, the Rama definitely sets us up to think about the malachas in that way. If you try learning Hilchos Shabbos from Shulchan Aruch, from Torah Shulchan Aruch, it could be a little frustrating because for some reason the Torah chose not to organize Hilchos Shabbos around a list of Lama Tavis malachas. There were other svarim that did. The Chayadim, notably, picked up on the Rambam's model of let's go through the malachas one by one. If you try to learn Shulchan Aruch, Mishnah Berurah, it could sometimes be somewhat confusing. It's topical. A good example of a modern sefer that sort of reimagined how you could organize Malachas Shabbos, but more or less along the lines of the Shulchan Aruch, not actually following the Shulchan Aruch sequence, but sort of the Shulchan Aruch's idea of thinking about topics and thinking about Malachas, the Shmir Shabbos Kolachasa, which is, and I may have used it, is beautifully organized, and it is not so arranged as much by the list of malachas, as much as thinking about different contexts. In the kitchen, outside, in an emergency situation, dealing with children, dealing with toys. So a top of organization. Shulchan Aruch is some cross between, Torah Shulchan Aruch, cross between the top of organization and trying to maintain the way things are organized in the Gemara. So what I want to do right now is to jump in. Obviously, over the course of tonight and next week, we're not going to cover all Lama Tavis Malachas, or even all the Lama Vavniks. That would take a lot more time. But I would like to cover, at the very least, the number of the Malachas of Sidur and Pas, the number of those first 11. Some of which are obviously relevant, and some which are surprisingly relevant. I actually want to start from the beginning. Originally, I was thinking, like I mentioned, some of you were just thinking, starting right away with Tochin and Lush, which definitely come up plenty in kitchen contexts and elsewhere. I actually want to start spend a couple of moments on the first handful of malachas, Zareya, Chorish, and Kotzer. And once I started putting things together more, there's a tremendous amount of richness and a tremendous amount of practical dinim that come up in Zareya, Chorish, Kotzer. The Shmir Shabbos happens to have, if you want to take a look inside, I certainly recommend. Shmir Shabbos has an entire per chavav about, you know, plant care, plant issues. The truth is, in Shulchan Aruch, here's an example where in Shulchan Aruch, Simon Shin Lamed Vav, and the Torah in Shulchan Aruch and Arachaim, also is built around Zareya Chorish Kotzer. Not all, but most of the issues of Zareya Chorish and Kotzer appear in that Simon. So let's talk a little bit about, let's follow the Rambam's lead, let's talk about some of the Daraisas, and then let's take a look at the Drabbanans. If we have a little time at the end, maybe we'll get into other Malachas, but I suspect that we're going to get to other Malachas next week. So first, let's talk about the Doraisas, just definitions. So Zoreya, Chorish, and Kotzer, that's the first three, as you know, the first three in the Mishnah. Just as an aside, when the Rambam presents the list, he actually reorganizes them into Chorish, Zoreya, Kotzer, as he puts it, Harisha, Zoreya, Katsira. And you may know, and the Gemara actually wonders, well, Zoreya, Chorish, if you think about it for a moment, which do you do first, Zoreya or Chorish? But in your backyard, right? So Harisha is plowing, or more generally, Harisha is preparing the land, preparing or improving the land for planting, and then you plant. So typically, you plow first, you plant second. So the Gemara gives an explanation of why the Mishnah put them out of order to tell you that there can be, as you point out, there can be Harisha after Zariah as well. You can continue to improve the land after you've already planted, and that will fall under the rubric of Harisha. Don't think, lest you think, that once you've planted, anything you do to the soil afterwards is fine, it's a freebie. That's why the Mishnah Badavka put it out of order and says Zoreya Chorish, tell you even the post Zoreya Harisha is problematic. But the Rambam says that's fine, but in terms of giving the basic dinim, the Rambam says I'm going to present it the way it typically is. So he presents Chorish Harisha Zriya Ketir. Be the SMA. So what are these? What are these? So Zareya is, the Av of Zareya is planting, whether it's planting seeds in the ground, or if you are you gonna you have a something that's already growing, you're gonna repot a plant, or you're gonna put it into the soil. So that's absolutely a violation of Zareya. You buy a tree in Home Depot that comes with a soil ball. Right? The roots are root ball with soil already in it, and you stick it into the ground. That is that's a problem of Zareya. And then that may be an av or a tolta. That's a discussion. What's definitely a tolta, but definitely usser, is to water. To water, to feed plants. To water plants. Mashke, mayim, lezra. We paskin is a tolta of Zareya. So just to think that out a little bit, to sort of some things that one might not immediately start developing the sensitivity, so to put lima beans into wet cotton. Classic kids elementary school project, right? The lima beans fall out on Shabbos. So to take the lima bean and put it back into wet cotton is a melacha deraisa. That's a Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam, based on a Gemara, not a Gemara on Shabbos, actually a Gemara on Tzvachim, but to put seeds into water, or to put an avocado pit into water, certainly recommended. Good experiment to try at home, but not on Shabbos. To do that on Shabbos is a violation of Zareya deraisa. To water on Shabbos is a violation of Mashke min haTorah. Now sometimes watering, well, one of the we'll come back to some of the watering issues. One thing that is not a violation of Zareya, obviously, is to plant something that does not grow. It may be muksa to redo the if you have a stone walkway. There may be some other malacha to redo to fix the stone walkway. We'll get to that in a moment. But to stick things into the ground that cannot grow is obviously not a malacha deraisa. Planting forks is not a malacha deraisa. And if you're looking at me and wondering why on earth we want to plant forks, perhaps some of you have a grandmother or great-grandmother. You ever see this? So it was more popular in the older generation to show up. Visit an older Jewish home and their forks or spoons stuck into the flower pots?
My Sparty friend does that.
Right. So I have recollections as a kid. I thought growing up it was like some agriculture, like it was like to get the air, the soil or something. Then I discovered that there was this is really a Hilchos Kashrus issue, but for 30 seconds is an important sidebar. This was a halachic urban legend. It is based on something real, like many urban legends, but there was this idea out there, which is incorrect, that if you need to kasher a fork or a spoon, instead of kashering hot water, you could just stick it into soil for a couple months and then it comes out kosher. That is false. It is based on something correct. But if correct, the Gemara, the very in the Masechus of Avodah Zarah, says that if you have a knife which has treif, which was used to cut something cold in treif, so if there was no method of tam transfer, in other words, if there was no heat involved, and you weren't cutting a spicy, sharp food, and you didn't leave it to soak in liquid for 24 hours, so then there was no method of transmission of flavor. Nothing caused the flavor to get absorbed into the knife. There's no blia. All there is residue on the outside. So you need to clean the surface. You don't need to kasha. So we have technology that allows us to easily clean knives without cutting our fingers. But before the days of scouring pads and detergent and sudsing detergent and running hot water, cleaning a knife was not always a simple thing, especially if you like your fingers the way they are. So oftentimes the best, one of the, Gemara points out, one way that's an acceptable way to clean a knife, to clean the surface of a knife, is to plunge it a number of times into tight packed dirt, so that will be good enough to get all the residue off. Now you can assume your knife is clean. So the Gemara talks about that. They take the knife, which again was not boleya, didn't absorb the treif flavor within, just it was used to cut something cold treif, so it has grease on the outside, that's how you clean. So that sort of, in popular conception in certain areas in Europe, got transmuted into sticking the dirt for a long time and it's going to remove all the flavor that nivla inside. That is not correct. Okay. But if you, for some reason, want to stick a fork into soil on Shabbos, that's not a not a malacha of Zareya. Now, Choresh is, as I was saying before, improving, making soil plantable, or making soil more, improving the soil, making it more plantable. So that obviously would, the most obvious, to plow is to turn over the soil with a hoe, or something like that. But there could be other things also which come up. One example that comes up occasionally, Gemara says that to remove rocks, if you've ever actually tried to set up a garden in the backyard, you'll know what I mean. One of the things you need to do, unless you just built yourself a little tray and poured it in topsoil from a bag, oftentimes you're going to find that you can work the soil to aerate it and to open up to soften it. But you also sometimes have to pull out rocks. So pulling out rocks, the Gemara points out, is a violation of Malachas Choresh. Now, just to recognize the following, it means that moving rocks is an exception to a more typical rule. Some of us were talking after last year, we assume that the Isud Rabbanan against Tiltul Muktza only is to move Muktza with your hands, and you move Muktza with your forearms. But we assume, most poskim assume, that there's no Isur against moving Muktza with your toes, moving Muktza with your feet, to kick something, or to move Muktza by blowing it, or to shift it with your nose, your ears, something like that, with your teeth, pick something up with your teeth, unless you need to move something off the table. So if you could have not dexterity, it's with your hands, or if you have the coordination to pick it up with your teeth and put it somewhere else, that's totally fine, without any compunction whatsoever. Not that it's a shinui, it's just that's not called Tiltul Muktza. Chazal forbade Tiltul Muktza. Tiltul Muktza means moving it by handling it. But an exception is if there are stones or pebbles strewn around on a piece of soil that's otherwise plantable, so to kick those stones away actually would be a violation of Melechus Choresh. It's not a problem in your house, it's not a problem if it's on concrete. If there are rocks on top of an area that's otherwise a plantable soil, so that would be Sikul Avadim. It wouldn't be Nisa Daraisa because it's a Shinoi, but to do, unlike Tiltul Muktza, to do Melacha with your toes, in a case where your toes are not the only way to do the malacha, it's not Issa D'Raisa, but it is Aser Midrabanan. It's called Kalach Hayad, or Shinoim. So that would be Aser Midrabanan. And then Kotzer, obviously, is picking things that are growing, whether it's fruit, whether it's a stem, whether it's a leaf. It could be a whole plant, it could be part of a plant. It could even be a plant that's growing that's not growing out of the soil. So the Gemara has a discussion in a couple of Masechtas about the status of a flower pot. It comes up in terms of halachas of mitzvahs atulias baretz. You have things growing, you have a flower pot in Eretz Israel, you have an apartment in Eretz Israel, you have things growing in a flower pot, so you have a tomato plant, but it's in a pot. So is that governed by Trumas and Meisur? Is that governed by Shemitah or not? That's a discussion. And the Gemara has a discussion in terms of Hilchos Shabbos. But it's important to realize the discussion about Hilchos Shabbos is only whether it's Asur min HaTorah or Asur min HaRabbanan. But either way, to pick tomatoes that are growing in a pot is absolutely usher. Even the Shulchan Aruch gives the example, you have things growing on the side of a pitcher. Obviously, a situation where the pitchers were not being, a kitchen that was not being well maintained, your pitcher just was sitting there, and you come back a couple of months later, and there are things growing on your pitcher. So it's probably something you don't want to touch. But unless you really have like moss or grass, I don't know, growing in those. So to uproot that little bit of moss is actually a violation of Malachas Kotzer. Or even to uproot mushrooms. Even though mushrooms are fungus and not plants, they're not really rooted. They're not gain nutrition out of the ground. They have roots. They anchor themselves somewhere just so they can physically have a place to grow. And that's still considered to be least midrabanan and a violation of Malachas Kotzer. Okay, so those are some of the definitions min haTorah of, again, either causing or causing or enhancing plant growth is zareya, and rendering soil fit or more fit, and enhancing soil for is choresh, and then removing something, detaching from the ground is kotzer. Yeah.
What if it's already removed?
What do you mean?
Like, let's say a flower that's like in your kitchen to like pick off a petal.
Oh, that should be fine unless it's a borer issue. In other words, if you're starting to pick off let's say Shabbos morning, you notice that the flowers are not quite as fresh as the flowers I told you, and by Shabbos morning some of the petals are beginning to shrivel. So you have to figure out whether you have a bar problem. But I'm under a gag order. I'm not allowed to talk about bar this year. So you should look at your notes in 12th grade, and you'll figure out whether that's a bar problem. But that's not yet. Now, to put, or let's say if you have a branch, the post and talk about, you have a branch that was already removed from the tree before Shabbos, so you're to pull an apple off that branch is not a violation of kotzer.
Let's say there's like grass that's or leaves that are already ripped, to be ripping them and playing with them.
But it's not designated for Shabbos.
Yeah, if you have leaves, let's say they fell before Shabbos, but they're not naturally useful, and you didn't designate them before Shabbos. So that would be muksa machus gufa, right? But if you have a branch, you picked a branch in Erev Shabbos with apples on it, so that's presumably not muksa. And then to pull the apples off the branch would be fine. Let's say to pull tomatoes on the vine. So to pull the tomatoes off that vine, assuming that the vine is disconnected, and you have tomatoes on the vine in the refrigerator, not tomatoes on the vine attached to the ground, so that would be fine.
Yeah.
Right. It is in terms of dash. There is some discussion about, is there a violation of dash and pulling things off of a branch? Certainly, apples on a branch or tomatoes on a vine are not a problem. And it's not a problem coats there either. Yeah. Question. Anything else in terms of the dress? Okay, so let's jump into some of the dinim drabbanim. I want to talk mostly about coats there, but let's get started a little bit with zoreya. Let's talk a little bit more about zoreya in terms of the watering issue. Watering. So something you should know, two kulas and a chumra. To pour water on the ground is a violation of Zoreya, ground where things are growing or could grow, even if I'm not interested in watering the ground. I'm just washing Tzilas Yadayim. I'm going to wash it away, having a picnic, wash Tzilas Yadayim over the grass. That's what we call psychration. I've come across that in the past. Either one of the general categories, the meta category, global categories of malacha, and again, psychration, just to refresh your memory, psychration is where I am doing, let's back up, davashay maskavim, psychration is a subcategory of davashay maskavim. Davashay maskavim means I'm trying to do pu'ula A, which may or may not lead to pu'ula B. So let's say one of the classic examples actually is a choresh. Okay, so Gemara talks about you're dragging this bench, you're dragging a chair across the lawn. I'm not interested in digging up. I'm not interested in working the soil. I'm interested in sitting in the shade. The chair is, the sun moved, of course, the afternoon. Now my lawn chair is in the sun, so I want to take the chair. I want to take the bench and move it to where it's shady. That's all I want. I'm not interested in working the soil. But it's easier to drag it than to carry it. And if I drag it, I can't really tell whether or not it's not that heavy, it may turn over the soil, it may not. So that's called davashay maskavin, and we pass on that as mutter. I'm doing pu'ula A, moving the chair, may or may not result in pu'ula B, plowing the soil, so that's fine. If it's psikreshe is where it's not, it may cause pu'ula B, it will definitely cause pu'ula B. So this is a really, really heavy bench. I know, this is 50 pounds. I know there's no way that I'm going to get it across the lawn without turning over the soil. So there, even though I'm not, that's not really my intention. All I want to do is move the bench. But since I know for sure moving the bench equals, moving the bench will definitely plow. So move the bench equals plowing, and that's a davashay miskai. That's a psik reshe, and that is forbidden. So if I'm, here's another example. I'm washing my hands. I have no, I don't really care about the water the lawn. I never water my lawn. Hopefully it rains enough, right? All right, water my lawn. Occasionally, I'm not interested in watering lawn. I just want to wash Tzilas Yadayim. And instead of having to walk back there, I'm feeling lazy. I don't want to walk over there to wash. I'm not back here. I'm sitting right here. I just want to wash my hands right here. If it was concrete, I would do it too. If there was a drain right here, if there was a bowl, I would wash in the bowl. I just don't have a bowl. I'm not interested in the grass. We say it doesn't matter. That's psikreshe. You know, you wash your hands over the grass. You know that it's causing, that it's watering your lawn. So that is forbidden. That's Shulchan Aruch says. Shin Lamed Vav Sif Gimel Shulchan Aruch says you can't do that. You can't. You have a little bit extra drink in your cup. You want to empty it out so you can take some soda. I'm not interested in watering the lawn. I just want to empty out the cup. If the cup was empty, I'd be happier. Doesn't matter. Psikreshe. It's forbidden. You can't pour the water on the... Shulchan Aruch talks that you got to make sure you just drop... If you're eating fruit, you're eating cherries, and you're going to drop the pits on the ground. You're eating watermelon, you're going to drop the seeds on the ground. That's Zorea. Especially if it's certainly if it's moist soil, where it could conceivably take root. That's pretty dangerous. So the Ramah goes on to say, you know, Ramah suggests Tov Lahachmir to just not have picnics on the grass. So you're just asking for trouble. You could organize yourself to avoid the problem, but certainly if you can have a group, it's very hard to avoid. So if you put that, if you have AstroTurf, that's there's no Isser on watering the AstroTurf. So if they put out a tent and have an artificial floor, that's fine. But the Ramah recommends it would be a good idea, Shin Lam Vav Sif Gimel, it would be a good idea in general to avoid eating and drinking where in a situation where this may end up being an outcome. To eat a piece of chocolate, I don't think is a problem on the grass, but if you're, you have to be very aware of either seeds or water hitting the grass. Yeah.
So if you were washing yadayim on like cement, and it's very possible that the water would like go down into the grass, would that be considered a
great question? So I told you I'll give you a chumrin and two kulas. And Ramah's chumrin is literally a chumrin, as he doesn't say it's mikra din, but he recommends it. Good to be aware of. Two kulas. So Shemir Shabbos Kalachasa quotes from Hashem Zalman, Arbach, and others in more than one place. The following, I found two different kulas that he has two different cases, and they sound like they're similar. He doesn't put them together, but it sounds like it's similar logic. So he writes, I'm not sure everyone agrees with Shemir Shabbos. I believe, I could be wrong, I believe that Rabbi Willig is machmer on this. So those of you whose families follow Rabbi Willig's Pesachim, you can find out. You know, in Mor Shakol, they were machmer about this. But Shemir Shabbos says, to use a, this comes up in camp context, it comes up in Israeli context, or often more rustic than American context, or more rugged, whatever it is. And you're living a little bit more outdoors, or things a little bit more Hamish. So sometimes, you know, I have a sink, and I'm going to wash my hands in the sink. But I know that the water goes through pipes, but the pipes, that's all a sham. The pipes end up, you know, it goes on at your camp. And there's a sink, it's a nice sink, but the piping doesn't go into underground plumbing system. It goes over there and ends up ultimately coming out into soil, which may have, there may be grass growing under your bunk. And especially likely that the grass is growing where the pipe ends, because that's where there's water. So now you're going to wash your hands and you're watering the grass. So the Shmir Shabbos says, there are those who are machmir. Shmir Shabbos says it's fine. Why? He says, it's a psik reishe. You have no interest in the grass, right? Okay, it is a psik reishe. Psik reishe is the author, but he argues that psik reishe, it's psik reishe plus another issue. It's psik reishe and it's koach sheni. In other words, you're not directly pouring the water. To wash your hands over grass, that's a direct masa. You're pouring the water on the grass. So it's psik reishe, awesome. But here he says, if I am trying to pour the water on the grass, I'm going to turn on the hose and it's going to go over there. It ends up, you know, split onto this, split onto that, ultimately ends up in the grass. That's what I'm trying to do. It's a problem. But he says, the combination of psikration and koch sheni, where it's indirect, and psikration, Shlomo Zalman thinks that's fine. So he would say that to use the sink, where it indirectly ends up subsequently on the grass you don't care about. If you do care, then that's a problem. If the lawn is dying, and this is actually this pipe actually ends up watering your lawn that you care about, that's a problem. But if it's only psik reishe and it's indirect, that's fine. And then he, in the same perek elsewhere, he has a similar type of kula based on Avni Nezer. He talks about walking into a greenhouse on Shabbos. So Shmir Shabbos says, let's say you want you're going to walk in and out of a greenhouse on Shabbos. You want to look at that. You can't touch anything. But you want to admire the flowers. Okay. So he thinks, even though when you close the door, you're adjusting the temperature in the greenhouse, and the temperature is critical. That's why you have a greenhouse in the first place. It's not just that if it just needed sun, you wouldn't need glass, right? You have a greenhouse because you also want to trap you don't just want the sun, you want to trap the heat. So you want to keep maintaining a certain temperature. Shlomo Zalman writes based on Chuvas Avni Nezer, it's a psik reishe and it's grama. You're not directly heating the plant. You're just You're indirectly, cooling or heating the plants, and it's psik reishe. So if you open and close the door because you're trying to get the right temperature, that's a problem. But psik reishe, you're just trying to get in and out. If you wouldn't, if there was nothing to see, you wouldn't go in. So then psik reishe plus a grama, he thinks, is fine. So that's your chumra and two kulas. But again, I warn you, I'm using the word chumra and kula in different senses. A chumra and two heter, I should say. These two things are mutter. And the Ramah said that strictly speaking, if you avoid inadvertently watering the lawn, throwing seeds in the lawn, it's fine, but it wouldn't be a bad idea to avoid it entirely. Especially if you're making an event for a whole group, it's very hard to make sure you don't want on your head that the people weren't being careful. Okay. That's in terms of some of the details of the Ramah. And now I want to move in the time that remains to some of the drabbanans of Kotzer. Kotzer actually attracts a number of Dinu Drabanan that are pretty significant. You can actually tell if you open a Rambam, Parakhav Alv, you can see which Drabanan, which Malachas have a lot of Drabanan, which have a little. Zoreh, Choresh is, or I should say Rambam, Choresh and Zoreh is very little to say. Kotzer, he goes on and on for a couple of Malachas. Okay, so number one, very important, the Gemara, this is also Simon Shin Lamed Vav in Or HaChaim, Sif Yud Gimel at the very end. Based on a Gemara at the very end of Masechet Shabbos and a Gemara at the very end of Masechet, near the end of Masechet Erevin, Shabbos Kuf Mimhein, Erevin Daf Kuf, the Shulchan Aruch quotes, there is an Iser Drabanan of Mishtamesh B'ilam, to make use of a tree. What does that mean, to make use of a tree? So it means either to stand on a tree, to climb on a tree, to lean heavily on a tree, like lean enough that if the tree wasn't there, you might tip over, or is mishtamash in terms of your body. You're leaning on the tree, you're climbing on the tree, you're stepping and standing on the tree, or objects. So to put something on, and this comes up more often, to put something on, hang something on a tree or on a bush, or to take it off, is a problem. So if the frisbee lands on the bushes, it's time to play ping pong instead.
You can take it off?
I don't think so. Can't put it on, you can't take it off. Just to illustrate how chomer this is, the Gemara in Erevin actually has a whole discussion about a mishtamish bi'ilan conundrum, a riddle. What do you do if you climb the tree on Shabbos? Or that's what do you do if you're up in the tree on Shabbos? So the Gemara has a discussion. Well, what should you do now? Should you come down? Should you stay there? So what would you say?
Come down.
Come down. Why?
Sakana.
All right. If it's sakana, you shouldn't climb in the first place, and you should definitely come down. Okay. So what he says, why should you come down? You say, well, because I shouldn't be in the tree, because it's a violation of Mishnah Shbilim to stay in the tree. So the Gemara says, well, on the one hand, remaining in the tree for the next couple of hours is a violation. It means for hours I'm being in violation of Mishtamash B'ilan. On the other hand, it's only a passive violation of Mishtamash B'ilan. If I climb down, so it'll only be a minute or a couple of seconds, but it's Bekum Vaseh, I'm doing it actively. So there's a whole discussion, which sort of sounds like a global discussion. It's almost like a quantity versus quality question. To do a short bout of more intensive violation of do Bekum Vaseh, but only for moments, versus a larger quantity but less quality. Just passively violate for a long time. There was a discussion, how do you look at Shev Al Tasa? Halacha Lamasa, I think we pask, it's a little complicated in Shulchan Aruch. It sounds like we probably pask that if you went up, if it was by accident, like you didn't realize what you were doing, and someone tells you, you know it was us, sir, you know I'd be up to climb a tree on Shabbos, they would say you should come down. But if you did it, but if you did it with Mazed, then we would say, as a knas,
stay there.
We hope you like the treehouse, because you're not coming down. And then Shulchan Aruch has more details. It depends if you're up there for Shabbos, not for Shabbos. Okay. But I don't imagine that scenario will come up often, but it definitely drives home the point that this is serious. And the post can go on to say, this is actually the first sif. This is actually the opening sif of Simon Shem Lanvav about this issue. Actually point out, people, we would tell you to come down because, again, staying there is a violation of Mishnah Mishbe'ilan. But the poskim say, but if something fell on a bush on Shabbos or a tree on Shabbos, there's no iser in leaving it there. The only iser is it's only also when I'm involved. So if it's my body, I'm on the tree. So being there is a passive violation of Mishnah Shvilin. But if something's hanging there, for things to be hanging on a tree on Shabbos is fine. The problem is I can't put something on the tree. I can't take something off of the tree. Obviously, as you pointed out before, pikuach nefesh is docha. So if you're on, if Shechter once mentioned, there's a story that's told about a prominent rav from previous generation, which he thought was incorrect. Historically, maybe accurate, but he thought halachically incorrect. That if someone leaves if it's the middle of the night, if you're in the side freezing cold severe in winter, and you don't have a coat, and there's a coat hanging on a tree, it is a violation of Mishtamash B'ilan to take the coat off the tree, but Pikuach Nefesh dictates that you should violate that danger of Avon. But under normal circumstances, where no one is in danger, so to put something on or take something off is a problem, as well as, again, for me, my body to actually lean heavily or to step on. There's some more definitions required in terms of how involved in the tree and how large a tree is, maybe for some questions. Yeah.
What if you have like a hammock or a tire sling or something?
Great question. So the Gemara decides that that actually segues right back to what I was talking about. In terms of defining what's considered to be Mishtamash B'ilan, let's talk about two things. Number one, you should just know, first thing Gemara says is that it's only if it's more than 3 tvachim off the ground. So stepping on grass is obviously not a problem. Even though your weight is on the grass, that's not a problem. Or if you have tree roots, you have tree roots coming up, so usually the tree roots are less than 3 tvachim off the ground. 3 tvachim is, say, 10, 11 inches, a little bit less than a foot. The vast majority of the time, tree roots in suburbia are a tefach off the ground. That's fine. So to step on tree roots is not a problem. But once you step in a part of the plant that's more than a foot off the ground, 11 inches, 3 tvachim, that's already a problem. Now, in terms of a hammock or something like that, so the Gemara in Erevin talks about, Shabbos, Erevin talks about a tzedim versus tzedet tzedim. So it works like this. I cannot directly lean on or hang my jacket, let's say, on or my pocketbook on a tree branch. That's Mishtamish B'ilon. I can't even hang it on a hook on the tree. So let's say you have in our previous house, one of our trees had the hardware to put up a flag for Memorial Day till July 4th. So the rest of the year, the hook is empty. So you have a hook attached to the tree. So you have a hook attached to a tree. So to use that hook is called mishtamish b'tzidei ilan, something that's alongside the trees. That's also a problem. To put something on the hook, take something off the hook, is a problem. Or let's say you have a ladder. That would lead to take a ladder and lean it against the tree on Shabbos, that's a violation. You're actually mishtamish b'ilan. Even if you left the ladder there from before Shabbos, to climb that ladder, you'd be mishtamish b'tzidei ilan. But let's say it's 2 degrees removed. Then at tzedet tzedim, we paskin is fine. So it'll be an example of tzedet tzedim. So let's say you have a hook on the tree and you left a jacket hanging from the hook from before Shabbos. Then you realize, the jacket's there. I should have taken it in Erev Shabbos. So the jacket's off limits. You can't take the jacket off the hook. Because then you'd be mishtamish with the hook. But you can stick your hands into the pockets and get stuff out of the pockets. You left your bag hanging from the hook. If you left your jacket hanging from the branch itself, then even to take things out of the jacket is a problem. But once it's just to take something off of the jacket, which is on the hook, which is on the tree, that's already fine. That is a mutter. So it depends how the hammock is constructed or a swing. So you have a tire swing or something like that. So it depends how it's built. If it's attached directly to the tree, it's a problem. But if you install hooks, and let's say you have a hammock between two trees. So if the way you did it is you installed hardware into the trees, and then you have hooks on the trees, then you hang the hammock from the hooks, so then you can't take the hammock off, because that would be mishtamash for the hooks, that would be mishtamash for tzidei ilan, but to lie down on the hammock is fine, because that's... Sidei tzedadu. Okay, so those are some of the that's the world of Mishtamish Bilan. Yeah, question.
No,
stretching.
Yeah.
Okay. Number two and number three. The Gemara. This is also in Shem Lamed Vav Sif Yud in Shulchan Aruch. This is based. It's actually fascinating. Just these handful of malachas are spread over five different masechtas. We already spoke about Shabbos and Erevin in terms of Mishtamish Bilan. Shabbos obviously is the core. Try to avoid any bad puns, but it's a core source, I will say, for Hilchos Shabbos in general, for the list of Lamtas Malachas. The issue with the putting the seeds into water, putting the avocado pit into water, and the lime beans into the wet cotton, that's the Gemara and Zvachim. Now comes our fourth Masechta, Masechta Sukkah. Taf Lam and Zayin is the source for the Isur Drabbanan against smelling. Am I allowed to walk? I can't go over and pick things from a tree or from a bush on Shabbos. How about to smell them? So halacha lemas Shulchan Aruch, based on the Gemara, we differentiate between. We say sometimes mutter to smell things that are growing, sometimes it's not. What does it depend on whether they're edible or not? To smell to walk over to a hadas branch, to a hadas bush, or to walk over to a rosemary bush. Some of you may have had time to spend time around rosemary bushes and. In Eretz Yisrael, or you have hyacinth, or you have roses growing in the backyard. You want to go over and smell them. That's absolutely fine. To discussion whether it's a muktzeh issue or not, and certainly to pick them is a problem. But to smell them, to go over and smell them is fine. But to go, if you have fragrant apples growing, you have a fragrant esrog tree growing. To walk over and smell that is a problem. Why? Right, because if the smell will make you want to eat it, to eat them obviously involves picking it. But if it's not something edible, to smell it will make you want to smell it more. But smelling more doesn't require obviously picking it. Hey, in theory, you may want to pick it and take it inside, but that for Chazal would not go through it. So again, to smell something edible, which is growing, is a problem. To smell something inedible, which is growing, is not a problem. And then finally, one last Zer Drabbanan. With this, we'll wrap up this evening. And this takes us to our fifth Masechta of the night, Maseches Beitza. Maseches Beitza Daf Gimel. This actually is a din that does not, I think it might be the first din we spoke about all night, which does not appear in Shin Lam Vav. This is in Shin Chaf Beis. Sif Gimel. The Gemara has Maseches Beitza. The Gemara has a series of Zer Drabbanan. And in that list is Peiros Hanoshim. If fruit fell off, fruit that fell on their own over the course of Shabbos, you're not allowed to eat until after Shabbos. And Mishabrua argues that it should even be true if you're not sure when they fell, which will often be the case. We're necessarily, if you happen to look out, the window right before Shabbos, you saw there was nothing there, and the Shabbos morning, the fruit says, then you know. But let's say, I don't know, it's the fall in the last couple of days, I don't know if it was yesterday, today. A suffix, even though it's a suffix drabbanon, the Gemara has in Maseches Bei has a rule that we will not rely on suffix drabbanon lekula in a situation where you can easily wait and the suffix will resolve itself. Because Peiros Hanoshim obviously only lasts on Shabbos. Wait another few hours till Shabbos is over and you can eat all the fruit you want, even though they fell on Shabbos. As the Mishnah Berurah argues that if you're not sure when it fell, so then you should avoid eating them on Shabbos. Okay, so these are the opening three malachas of the list, where you adopt the Mishnah's order or the Rambam's order. Either way, Zareah, Choresh, Kotzer, and again we focus at the end, we define each of them. We spoke about some of the watering issues and the Mude the rocks issues, and where things might be growing. Where things might be growing, whether it's Asma and Atobi Drabbanan, but if it's growing, you can't pick it. And then we spoke about the different issues in terms of watering. And then the three Gzeres Drabbanan, three of the Gzeres Drabbanan, there are more, but three of the Gzeres Drabbanan for Kotzer, Shtamash B'ilan, smelling something edible which is growing, and Peiros Hanoshim B'Shabbos. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming. And Rich, next week we will continue.